Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What is up, LAFB fans? Will Decker, your host from the Bruin Bible, and draft is in session. We are here to talk about Bet Online and the good people behind the brand. Football season is officially back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player needs, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code LAFB to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. What is up, Bruin Bible listeners? We are here recapping another UCLA victory. A little one that got me a little nervous at the end. A lot of positives, a lot of negatives. But, Madman, I think overall, just knowing what we didn't have in our department and a guy in Charbonnet, I think we got to take this as a big, big victory for our UCLA Bruins. And, you know, to kind of start this off, we go back to last week's game. We were talking about this against Stanford. Some of the bad omens to start that game. You know, Bill McGovern not in the booth. RJ Lopez kicking it out of bounds. You know, Stanford getting the ball at the 30. Very similar, you know, in a lot of ways. McGovern's nowhere to be found. Once again, Charbonnet is seen in full pads, not playing, a heart attack for all UCLA fans. Oh, and by the way, first pass attempt. Offensive play of the game, Dorian Thompson-Robinson gets picked off. And it felt like, you know, it was, you know, just going to be a rough outing for our UCLA Bruins after that. We hold them to a field goal, and the offense proceeded to give us a nice show before that. And that's where I want to start. I want to start with the offense, the positives of what was going on there. Madman, this was a masterclass of the run game. And for my money, this may be the greatest offensive game that Chip Kelly has coached at UCLA. And I know we've said that a couple of times this year, but just knowing what he didn't have in Charbonnet, 26 carries, 402 yards on the ground. This is the most rushing yards UCLA has had since 2010. Three rushers coming close to 100 yards. Give me your takes, Madman, because I was blown away at what Chip Kelly was able to put together without the likes of our bell cow in Charbonnet.
No, Will, you nailed it. And it was just such a special performance from the run game. And truth be told, that 402 yards on a technicality stayed at 402 yards. Because if you recall, that little flip pass to Cas Allen in the second drive that got 42 yards, that was basically a glorified run. I mean, so you're talking about maybe closer to 445 in this game. But I think what was so special, Will, and I think you nailed it, is the variety in which UCLA was able to cross 400 yards without the best running back in America. And it really started with Cas Allen. And you and I and Ryan, we've been talking about it now for the better part of a year, Will, of Cas Allen being in that Percy Harvin, DeAnthony Thomas type of role for UCLA. And this was the game that really showcased that. And it really demonstrates how Chip is getting the chess pieces ready to go on the board for that big one against SC. But Cas Allen, the 200 total yards, the gorgeous 70-plus yard touchdown in the third quarter. But it was really Cas Allen with that 34-yard run on the first drive, Will, and then that 42-yard flip pass slash run, we'll call it, on that second drive to make that 14-10 after a challenging first couple of drives defensively. And that is what enabled UCLA to settle in and then use Keegan Jones on more zone type reads and one cut and go type of plays. And the fact of the matter is you had four guys, Will, with career highs in rushing. When you talk about Cas Allen, 137 on the ground, Dorian with 120 on the ground on 10 carries and two touchdowns, Keegan Jones with 98 on the ground on 12 carries and a touchdown, And then Mr. Yankoff, the cigar, the red Auerbach victory cigar for the Bruins, coming in to salt it away with 40-plus yards. And that's really where you saw that missing piece of not having Charbonnet, of being able to close that game out and needing that bigger back to get those couple yards. And so it was really exciting to see that all around. And all credit to Chip Kelly to get 400-plus yards rushing without the best running back in the country. And I completely agree. I think it was his best called game as a UCLA Bruin over the last 5 years. And here is UCLA now 8-1 and one game away now from the granddaddy of them all on November 19th.
And just an incredible performance, just how he was able to articulate, you know, the offense without his, you know, his master student, if you will, in Charbonnet. And, you know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, listen, this is the most rushing yards he's had. Two highlight level plays. I mean, the 34-yard run, that was just open field hurdle going towards the sideline. The spin move is the most underrated part of it near the left sideline. Gets out of it, gets a couple extra yards, and keeps going. The touchdown run to the left side, hurdles a guy, gets into the end zone. It's just that special material that we get from Dorian Thompson-Robinson where he was able to be in full control again. And, you know, maybe there's some credence where some of his first passes that get intercepted, like he comes out and plays well. You know, I'm talking about the USC game from last year, did the exact same thing, except it was his two first passes. So DTR with a career game. And I'm glad you brought up Kaz Allen because he's the guy, he's the player of the game in our opinion. Sure. And with Kaz Allen, we were kind of waiting for that breakout game, Madman. You know, opening week against Bowling Green, 10 catches, 85 yards, had a touchdown. Has kind of been quiet. He had a big run against Stanford. But, you know, the most rushing yards he had was 66 in a game since then. The most receiving yards he's had since that opening week was about 45 to get four catches, 63 yards, and then nine carries, 137 yards. 200 yards of total offense was just, you know, the spark plug that this team needs. And I think this is just a true testament that you can change the offense, you can change the scheme in a variety of different ways, but speed will always kill on the football field. And Kaz Allen is among the best of them. Keegan Jones, 98 yards. We almost had three rushers with 100 yards in total. So the offense was flowing, 571 yards of total offense, seven touchdowns, only two punts. Offense was not the problem. We'll put it to you like that. The offense was not the problem. Madman, I am a little scared about the defense. We're up 42-18, you know, going in to the third quarter after a 75-yard Kaz Allen run. I'm thinking dagger. I'm buying shots for the bar with my brother. My brother's in town. We're having a blast in Manhattan Beach. And slowly but surely, it kept creeping back up, you know, allowing these teams to keep on competing and competing. And when I really break it down, Ben Bolch put out an article saying, you know, this defense needs to improve if we want to win the Pac-12 title. And, you know, Trent Bourget, no disrespect. I think he's a phenomenal talent at the quarterback position, 349 yards, three touchdowns, one pick. If we're doing this against Trent Bourget, we got a quarterback who is a Heisman finalist coming in the next 2 weeks with the likes of Mario, you know, Williams and Jordan Addison on the outside. We've got to shore up the secondary and just a lot of areas. You know, 93rd in the country now, UCLA is in passing yards out of 131 teams. This is just a recurring problem with Chip, and they let them back in the game, let them off the hook. Give me your impressions of the defense, Madman, because I am pretty nervous going into, you know, arguably a USC game, and if we do get through them, a likely rematch against the likes of Oregon. So,
Will, I think it's spot on exactly what you're saying in terms of the concerns, but I look at this game in a couple of different phases here, Will. So obviously the defense got off to a rough start, but look, you know, the opening play of the game was an interception with DTR, Arizona State, all the momentum, the crowd, you're thinking, oh my God, could this be another potential upset type of game against a top 10 team this year, this week in college football? UCLA does an outstanding job holding them to three on that field goal. Then the next drive took Arizona State all the way to fourth and goal at the three. There was a very clever reverse misdirection design with the tight end where Bourget dropped it over the top. Really nice play. That's sort of a tip of the cap to make it 14-10. But then, Will, I thought the middle of that game, there were five possessions where the game went from 14-10 to 35-10, and it was essentially 7-10 to 35-10, where UCLA forced four punts and the game and had that sack at the end of the first half. So there were five possessions there in consecutive sequence in the middle part of that game where the defense did really an outstanding job. And I think that's where Mouassal was able to really impact the game significantly with his 12 tackles, his two tackles for loss, his sack. Murphy got involved with his sack, his two tackles for loss. And we were really able to put Arizona State behind the chains and off schedule. Then at 35-10, that's when things swung a little bit. You're not going to be able to hold a potent offense the whole night. But I think a couple of things didn't work in UCLA's favor that are fixable. One was, Will, sometimes you can score so quickly that it gasses your defense. And Kaz had that one long run. That was a one-play drive, and boom, the defense was right back on the field. Then the very next sequence, there was a sudden change with Dorian's fumble on that missed mesh read. And that was a sudden change where not only is it a sudden change, but Arizona State gets the ball near the 50-yard line. Then you sort of have a three and out. So the defense didn't really get a chance to really reset themselves in terms of energy level. And that really showed itself on those subsequent possessions where they got their hands caught in the cookie jar quite a bit on defensive holding penalties, personal foul penalties. That's really a product of when you're getting tired and you're sort of cheating a little bit. You know, you're grabbing, you're holding, you're doing some things because you're gassed. So I think discipline-wise, there's a real opportunity for improvement. But I think in one of those games, I think it was a circumstance where UCLA's offense almost outran the defense's ability to reset themselves a little bit. So obviously there's a lot of concern moving forward. But Will, we have to look at the reality here. We're 9 games into the season. We're not going to be seeing plastic surgery changes on this defense. And at the end of the day, that USC-UCLA game is going to be a shootout. It's going to come down to 2 or 3 stops. That Oregon game is going to be potentially a shootout. It's going to come down to 2 or 3 stops. So how can UCLA best position themselves, eliminating the penalties, be sure tacklers, and then have controlled pressure with their pass rushers and their linebackers in key down and distance scenarios? Those are the 3 things that I think they need to focus on moving forward, and those are 3 things that are fixable. This is never going to be confused with a Georgia defense or one of those Alabama defense or one of those LSU defenses. It is what it is. This is a middle of the pack, 50th, 60th, 70th ranked defense. But these are the 3 areas that I think Chip and McGovern can really focus on to tighten up going into that SC game in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the down and distance, and it's been rough. You know, they're 86th in the country right now in third down conversion rate, and they're 101st. They're tied for 101st in total first downs allowed in 2020. So they need to tighten up on those third down plays, get stops when they can. And that was a great point that you made that I didn't think about with, you know, the defense needs time to recuperate just as much as the offense does. So big plays, they can hurt the defense, ironically, even with a touchdown like Kaz Allen. So
that's one of the areas, Will, if I can jump in there, of where you miss Charbonnet. Because Charbonnet is not just this incredible running back that can break all these tackles and have all these long runs and put this highlight tape together, and you love his body and you love his feet and you love his quickness, but he's the ultimate tempo setter. And when you have a lead, you can give him the ball and really control tempo and start milking clock and milking these games away. And when you didn't have that, you could really see that's where it was missing. Keegan Jones is a straight line track star, one cut and go kind of guy. Kaz is another track star. He's going to hit those home runs. That's where you saw you needed Yankoff in the game at the end to really salt it away, because you needed more of a controlled running game to move those chains, chew the clock, let your defense recuperate. And that was a great adjustment by Chip, bringing Yankoff in the game at the end there. He could sense it, and he was able to do it. And no one's ever going to confuse Yankoff with Charbonnet at this stage in their careers, but he did a great job filling that bell cow role for that last drive to salt the game away.
And it brings to mind just the comparison you made of, you know, bringing in Yankoff to essentially slow down the offense. It's one of my favorite Pixar movies, The Incredibles, at the end where the kid is racing and he's running in front of them, like, no, don't go too fast. They don't want to prove that he's the track star, the flash that he is. Second, go for second. Hey, and then they like runs again. Go for again. Pulls back to third. Third's good. Third's great. So like they had the track star speeds and they go pull back just a little bit. We just need to milk some clock. Let's give it to our guy Yankoff. 23-yard run going into the red zone, then punches it in for a 1-yard touchdown. Chip Kelly needed Yankoff, and the UCLA fan base needed Yankoff. So we're very pleased that we got our filling of Yankoff. Madman, very fun day as well, as UCLA has gotten back into the top 10. You're an alumnus of the proud UCLA University. Your father is an alumnus of the UCLA University. Give me your thoughts on what this means for UCLA to not only be a basketball school, but now a football school that's, you know, fighting in the top 10 for major New Year's Day bowl games.
Well, I'll summarize it with a little bit of a personal story. My parents are in London right now. My dad's giving a talk, and he and I are WhatsApping back and forth because that's the message platform of choice when you're international. And he said, I can't sleep. I'm waking up every 15 minutes checking the score. And he's got to give this big talk, you know, the next morning, because he's just like, I can't relax until I know this game has been won and I can exhale and then I can go give my talk. So it just means so much, Will, to this program. Obviously, historically in LA, it's always kind of been USC's the football school, UCLA's the basketball school. To be able to go into November with an 8-1 record, this is the furthest this UCLA team has gone record-wise since 2005. And to have a credible chance with three games to go to win a Pac-12 title, to go to the Rose Bowl, and to eliminate that 24-year drought, it just means everything. And we've talked about this for a number of episodes, Will, a number of conversations you and I have had. This is a very proud program in terms of alumni, in terms of fans. A lot has been made about the attendance. A lot has been made about celebrations. So much has been made this season about where this team has come. It's been the ultimate remember the Titans type of season, where a team that's sort of been casted away early part of the season is now in a position to not only compete for a Pac-12, but arguably be a dark horse CFP team if all falls right. And so it's just so special right now in terms of what it means to be UCLA. And, you know, there's only one school, Will, in America and in the world today that's top 15 in basketball, top 15 in football, and top 15 in academic reputation with the new rankings that came out. It's UCLA. There's only one school that has that distinction. And so it just really means everything. And to go now one more week, everyone's been really nervous because UCLA historically has sort of stubbed their toes in November when they've had good teams and there's some battle tissue. You can feel it from the fans. One more game to put a good game together and then set that great one up November 19th. And for UCLA, you know, those games, Will, obviously every year they mean a lot, but this year it means so much. And if UCLA can win that game, it just holds so much more weight when both teams are great and what this could mean. And when you talk about moving to the Big Ten with momentum moving forward, you look at the facilities UCLA has. You look at the campus UCLA has. You look at the educational pedigree UCLA has. You look at the likability, the world reputation, all of these things, and now the money from the Big Ten. There is nothing UCLA doesn't have that a USC has or someone else in the West Coast as a power has. And so this year, we could look back, Will, in such a special way, almost the way Duke basketball looks back at that 1986 season when they finally made the Final Four and Coach K arrived, or the way Alabama looks at the 2009 season before their great run, or the way USC looked at that 2002 season with Carson Palmer before they made that great run. This could be that pave-setting season that sets Chip and this UCLA program on a run of 5, 6, 7 years where they could really be competing for some major prizes. And we're so close to that that it's getting tantalizing. It's so exciting and can't wait to sort of continue to be on this journey. We knew, Will, this was going to be a special year. We had predicted a 10-2 season, and I think they're well on their way to that and possibly more. The school record number of wins in a single season is 10. I think that's in serious jeopardy this year, regardless of what happens. And so it's really a magical year that's unfolding before our very eyes in Westwood.
Magical is the word, too. And, you know, through three games, we were pretty unconfident going, you know, I don't know if it's in the cards this year. We had these high expectations. And just how the team has been able to transform itself, put all the egos aside, and just go out and play football, man. It has been so much fun to watch as somebody that covers the team and is now a part of this LA community. So I'm really grateful that the Bruins are taking off this year. And I know you guys are, too. Thank you for listening. Also, one fact before we get to the game balls, make sure you are liking and subscribing our new UCLA channel on YouTube. It's a big deal. Make sure to check that out. And we have a Victory Bell podcast for 4 weeks. We're going to culminate with the live show
in the parking lot of the Rose Bowl. We want fans out there. We want people coming through. We're going to have a tailgate. The details are TBD, but we will be out there having fun with UCLA fans and, you know, that team from South Central and their fans alike. So it's going to be really, really fun. So check out both of those things. Madman, favorite part of the show, it's the game balls. You ready, my guy?
Oh, I love, ever ready to do this with you, brother.
You get the first one as always. Where are you going and why with your first game ball, brother?
Thriller, I think it's a little bit of an obvious one. And in terms of what this young man sort of meant to this game and the dimension that he brings, and it's Kaz Allen. You mentioned the great stats, the 11 carries, the 137 yards, the touchdown, the four catches for 63 yards. Having that 200 yard, exactly 200 yards of total offense and the touchdown, but just being able to bring that dimension. And now thinking ahead a little bit, assuming things go okay against Arizona, having that ability to have that thunder and lightning out of the backfield with a Charbonnet, with a Kaz Allen, this is that added dimension, this added element now that Chip has brought to the table that can really change the course of this last 2 months of this season for UCLA. I thought he was absolutely tremendous in terms of finding the hole. His track speed is just impeccable. And this is the Kaz Allen we were waiting for. Will, you mentioned the trough in the middle of the season. Obviously, he had the first touchdown, the first offensive touchdown after that DTR long run against Bowling Green, and then didn't have a touchdown, Will, up until last week in garbage time against Stanford. And so waiting for him to really break out. Now he gets that third touchdown, the long one, having this run and this lather ready to go. This is that added piece now that UCLA can bring to the table. And you have this incredible variety for the team now moving forward, where you've got a Kaz Allen who has the confidence to get over 100 yards. You have a Keegan Jones who has the confidence to get 100 yards. And now, of course, you've got the centerpiece in Charbonnet who's going to be healthy and rested and ready to go. So Kaz Allen has to be the first individual with the game ball with that 200-yard performance and really stabilize things. Again, it was still a chaotic first quarter. That 34-yard run and that 42-yard pass really stabilized things for UCLA, for that defense to catch their breath and create separation.
That is a phenomenal first game ball. And I feel like this is just the way that Chip operates, where he has guys and he has game plans for players, and he saves them for opportunities when they need them most. I mean, Kaz Allen was used this way in the SC game, and he wasn't really used like that as much leading up to that game, but that was kind of, in his mind, the secret weapon going into that game. I think someone on this podcast may have predicted that Kaz Allen would break out last year. This guy over here, Mr. Madman. But it was just, he saves them for the moments when we need them most, and when a Charbonnet goes down, somebody's got to step up, and nobody did that more than Kaz Allen on the football field. One of the fastest guys I've ever seen in the open field in all of college football. He's our DeAnthony Thomas from Chip Pad. We're hoping Jaden Marshall can potentially be the next one coming in, as he is a true freshman here for UCLA. So hopefully Jaden Marshall can take the torch from Kaz Allen that DeAnthony Thomas passed to him there. So great first game ball. Love it. And my first game ball, Madman, I think we got to give it to the guy, man, Chip Kelly himself. I'm in awe of what this guy can do. And this is such a revenge season for Chip. I don't think people are really putting into context how cast aside this guy was in the national grand scheme of things. Chip Kelly, let me take you back a decade at Oregon. He is changing the face of college football with the run game, the spread, dubbed a genius. This guy can't fail, can't miss coaching prospect. Goes to the NFL, signs a big deal with the Eagles. First 2 years, they're competing. I think they made the playoffs 1 year, you know, very solid. Falls off pretty badly there. Takes a job with the 49ers, could not go any worse. 2-14 that year, miserable. Finds his way to UCLA, and the first three seasons are very, just a myriad of, you know, injuries and losses and tough situations and poor defenses and things of that nature, to the point where the fan base is coming in, and I would argue, we were pro Chip Kelly coming in this year. Do you think it's a fair assessment that about 60% of the fan base was maybe ready to move on from Chip Kelly coming into this year? Because at least from my interactions with some of the UCLA crowd, that's how it felt. If not 60, it was 50-50. It was a coin flip. And what he's been able to do this year with just the run game that we've seen him open up in ways. I mean, I go back to the Utah game where we need a score. And just the play call he did to Logan Loya over the middle on a play action from DTR for Loya to go 70 yards to the house. You know, last night, your bell cow's out. I think he is one of those rare geniuses where he likes it harder. It's like, I want it to be more difficult so I can grand scheme this thing and show you how much of a genius I really am at the run game. UCLA fans, I know he's prickly. I know he's hard to deal with as a member of the media, but we have the right guy in charge here. And it's showing in dividends this year. And oh, by the way, everyone complained about the record and how, you know, he has been under 500, you know, his entire career leading up to it. He is now 26-26 at UCLA. You can no longer say he has a losing record as a head coach of UCLA. And, you know, we mentioned it with the run game, 571 yards of total offense, 42 carries, 402 yards, 9.6 yards a carry with four or five different running backs toting the rock. That is a genius when it comes to the run game. And that is my final statement on the speech of Chip Kelly, because I think we need to appreciate him as UCLA fans. Madman, what do you think about Chip Kelly getting my first game ball?
Will, I love it, and it's so appropriate. And I think you said some things that were really profound and so accurate, as always, where I would argue, Will, that it was more than 60%. I think it was 70 or 75% of the fan base didn't think that Chip Kelly should continue. And I think this is where credit must go, A, to Martin Jarman, but also to Dan Guerrero, the athletic director right before Martin, for sticking with Chip Kelly. And in those first couple of years, we live in a college football world where it's such instant gratification. If you don't perform in season one or season two, everyone's ready to look and make a change. And I think UCLA has found the perfect coach for them. If this Bruin program is smart, and I know Martin Jarman is so intelligent, I want to see Chip Kelly retire at UCLA. I want to see Chip Kelly to be the coach of UCLA the next 15 to 20 years, because it's that level of stability that is required to be able to create a great run. Look back at all of the great runs in sports and in college football. Will, I know you're a huge Warriors fan. No greater organization right now in sports than the Warriors when you look at stability of coach, GM, star, owner. And it's that stability in this world of constant change that is needed. And I will say, I think it's a perfect marriage, UCLA and Chip Kelly, because Chip Kelly loves how academically oriented UCLA is. It is part of his vision, mission, values as a coach. Ben Bolch talked about the coining of the term books and ball. He's talked so much about the all of the dimensions to make a great young man. And it's athletic, it's intellectual, it's social, it's spiritual. Those are his four pillars of a chair. And I think he embraces the fact that 80% of the recruiting class at UCLA needs to have a 3.0 GPA, because he himself is such a pragmatic, intelligent individual. And he loves the fact that UCLA sometimes rides under the radar of sports media in Los Angeles when you have the likes of the Lakers and the Dodgers and USC football and UCLA basketball. He loves those elements. And so I think this is such an incredible match made in heaven. And we're only going to see those dividends continue. Will, you mentioned the 26-26 record. 5 years at UCLA, the winning percentage has gone up every year across those 5 years. So you're seeing the improvement, but sometimes it takes time. Rome wasn't built in a day. And this is the year we're finally reaping the rewards of his philosophy, his strategy. And this is absolutely the right guy for the job. Hard to believe this time last year, Will, we were going into the final phase of November. UCLA was 5-4 coming off of the loss at Utah. And we were talking about, what is it going to take at the end of this season for Chip to keep his job? And we all said, he's probably going to have to go 3-0 and beat SC. He did that. And now look where he's standing here. This is going to be the first offseason in 5 years. There's going to be no conversation about who the coach is going to be next year and moving forward. Chip Kelly is still one of the great coaches in college football. And you've said it. Brentley Weissman has said it. We've said it. One of the five best play callers in college football. I think the greatest play caller historically in the history of the sport in terms of what he's meant, and certainly top five today. We have the right guy for the job. And it's so exciting. If we play our cards right, I want to see Chip Kelly retire a UCLA Bruin and have his name next to Terry Donahue's at the Rose Bowl box, because that's where it belongs and that's where it needs to be for UCLA football to reach its enormous potential.
You heard it here first, man. We got the guy we need to keep going, UCLA fans. And, you know, in terms of innovation, there's no way he's not in the top 5 to 10 in terms of play callers on the offensive side of the football in the history of college football with the spread offense and what he's been able to mean there. So Chip Kelly, game ball number one, much deserved. But it's Madmanster. He's got game ball number two. Where's my brother going with his second game ball?
Thriller, I have to. It's almost an extension to Chip Kelly, but I got to go with DTR. And he was just so special again last night. And I think it's, again, this evolution, Will, with Chip and DTR understanding who they are and what they are. You're an NBA guy, Will. I'm not sure you're going to love this analogy or not. Let's see. Let me brace myself here. But I think of Caleb Williams as Steph Curry, and I think of DTR as Russell Westbrook. And I think that when you look at a Caleb Williams and a Steph Curry and a Pat Mahomes, they're so cool and calm under pressure. And that emotional intelligence is something that you can build game over game and put a whole season together of excellence. They're competitors. They want to win. There's no doubt. But there's an emotional intelligence there where they're level. Guys like DTR and Russell Westbrook, it's so much predicated on that chip on your shoulder and that anger and that hate, and you want to prove everybody wrong, that you have to pick your spots. There's ebbs and flows. And while a guy like Caleb Williams can have 12 great performances in a season, a guy like DTR with that disposition is going to have 4 great performances in a season. But those 4 could be better than any of the 12 that anyone else produces. And I think both DTR and Chip understand that, where he peaked against Utah and Washington. You know, we fell a little bit back to the bad habits against Oregon. Stanford was more of a base game where I just want to recalibrate you emotionally, re-lock you in. And this game was all about unleashing his athleticism again. And we saw that. You mentioned it, the hurdle, the baby hurdle, you know, the jawing with the fans, the showtime. He was just so stupendous in terms of running the ball. He needed to make the throws when he had to. Beautiful check down to Keegan Jones for a touchdown. Lovely throw to Ezekiel for that 9 yards for the touchdown, where Ezekiel almost set up like a catcher and he threw a fastball low and away for that touchdown. DTR now is starting to rebuild that momentum, where that anger and that chip on his shoulder and that hatred is going to come out November 19th. And that's what we're playing towards. And so DTR was absolutely special, the emotional leader here of this team. And we are only going to go as far as he takes us emotionally. And so he was absolutely terrific. The 169 yards passing, 2 touchdowns after the pick, and then, of course, the 120 yards rushing. But to me, it was more his athleticism, everything that he brought to the table, and consistently kept Arizona State on their heels, Will. The 2 rushing touchdowns, both on third down, you know, critical third down runs. And you brought up a great point on Twitter. This is one of the limitations of not having Charbonnet, where 3rd and 2, we got to go to a Kaz Allen. That's not really his game. He gets that first down, gets popped. The ball comes out, almost a game changing from a momentum standpoint. Who's there? DTR gets down there, recovers the fumble, runs for another 10 yards, and turns that into a 20-yard play. He's that guy. He's that dog. He's that Russell Westbrook, where Westbrook used to jaw with Durant and say, "I'm here. I'm here." DTR was kind of telling the Tempe fans, "I'm here, and I'm going to be here 2 weeks from now." So I got to give it to my guy, Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
DTR, just a masterclass performance too. And just the comfortability, I will say, he does run at like the Westbrook level of hype. He makes athletic plays, highlight plays every now and then. But just the comfortability this year we've seen in the offense from him too. It's a combination of Westbrook, but the X's and O's for the past 4 years have paid off for him. It's a guy working at the highest level of his self-actualization on the football field. So I'm really pleased in what we're seeing him. And I just want to touch on a point too. Highlight level plays from a guy like DTR, you don't know what that means for the rest of your team. It gets the people going, as my guy Will Ferrell likes to say in Blades of Glory. I mean, the hurdle, you know, the 34-yard hurdle was the best one I've seen. SC game, I think a lot of people would say that one was – you know, bigger because it was the SC game. Yes, maybe that was. But if you take the context away, when you're running open field like that and just hurdle a 6'2" linebacker in the middle of the field, cut it to the outside, spin move near that, that's incredible. We talked about the first touchdown as well. Just, I mean, I'm at a loss for words of what DTR means to this team and just the maestro he's become. When, you know, beginning of the season, I'll be the first to admit it, I thought there was a talk that maybe Garbers could run the offense a little bit better. You got to, if you're going to tout yourself on the wins, you got, you know, hit yourself on the losses. DTR was great, and he is second all-time now on the passing list or total yards list for UCLA, passing Cade McNown. So game ball number two going to our guy DTR. I love it. Second game ball, Madman. I think we got to go with Darius Mwasa. You made a great point with him earlier. He's just the leader of this defense. He makes big play after big play. Double-digit tackles last night, 12 total tackles. The big sack he was able to get in the backfield on Borgé, who's a little shiftier than a lot of quarterbacks get, you know, credit for. Two tackles for a loss. He just embodied everything we thought he was going to be, being a transfer from Hawaii, making the tackles for a loss, making big play after big play, and just being the general of the defense. He was the best player on defense for us all night, and I don't think it was particularly close. You know, I think this front seven is probably the best Chip Kelly has had, you know, as a unit, just with the Mwasaus, the Murphy twins making plays, Latu, who I still want to tout as defensive player of the year within the Pac-12. Just a lot of big things going on here, Madman. So Mwasaus, fantastic. What were your thoughts on Mwasaus getting game ball number two?
Well, it was spot on. And I think that, again, we talked about it. It was that middle portion of the game, those five possessions when Mwasaus was really able to anchor, get the vast majority of his 12 tackles, get his two tackles for loss, get the sack, and really help create that separation. You know, Will, he doesn't get enough credit. I know we mention him. We had that great comparison on plays with him and Manti Te'o a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the interception against Stanford. We talked about the interception against Utah. But we tend to talk more about the Latus and the Murphy twins and Carl Jones making a spectacular play and Blaylock and Osling the third, because there's more of a flair for the dramatic on some of those plays, an iconic interception, an incredible sack that gets the crowd going. But you need the anchor. You need the glue. And play over play, you can sack somebody. And these explosive offenses like Oregon and SC, you put Bo Nix second and 17 or Caleb Williams second and 17, but there's still two more plays where they can easily get a first down. You can intercept a player like that, but you still need consecutive, consistent stops to be able to create separation in the game. And that's where that middle linebacking anchor in Mwasa was so critical. His closing speed laterally, his ability to read coverages of running backs and tight ends kind of coming out of the backfield and who he needs to pick up, directing the traffic of that front seven to keep things in front, at least make things difficult, ensure that we're in the right position to be sure tacklers, even if it doesn't always happen, and ensure that the gap integrity and the discipline is there to minimize the number of penalties. It's those plays that don't necessarily go in the box score or don't necessarily are the things that lead a highlight tape on an ESPN or a college game day that's so imperative. And Mwasaus, Will, is going to be so critical in these big games moving forward, where without Mwasaus' A game, it doesn't really matter how great DTR is or Charbonnet is or what have you, because you still need to stop guys on the other end. We are going to need him so critically. So I love giving Mwasaus the game ball. He was the other one sort of on my list, at the very top of my list. So I love that you selected him, and rightfully so moving forward. The more we hear Darius Mwasaus's name in November, the better UCLA is going to do record-wise in November. And there's just a straight correlation there moving forward. And he's off to a tremendous start in November with that great performance.
And I don't want to jump the gun, but 2 weeks from now, one of the main matchups I'm going to be watching is Mwasaus against Travis Dye, because I think it's going to be a very fun matchup, kind of similar to those Eddie George, Ray Lewis matchups in the early 2000s, you know, where it was just those two dictated the game, and maybe not to the extent that, you know, a Ray Lewis or an Eddie George can, but that is going to be one of the top three matchups, in my opinion, as we head to the Victory Bell coming on November 19th. So lots of stuff to look forward to. Final game ball for Madman. Where are you going and why, brother?
Thriller, I got to go with the third head of the three-headed monster on the ground. It's fitting. There's, again, like we talked about, it was 402 yards on a technicality. It was probably 450 yards. We're counting flip plays as passes, you know. But Keegan Jones was spectacular. The 12 carries for 98 yards. Catching the ball out of the backfield, caught another touchdown on a beautiful rope down the right sideline, that check down. He was absolutely tremendous and needed to be with Charbonnet going down. And it just speaks to his level of preparation, because during warmups, Charbonnet tried to give it a go, wasn't there. Okay, Keegan Jones, you're RB1 with Kaz Allen back there. You guys are going to share it. So to be ready, I think, is so critical. And he showed a tremendous level of preparation. You know, Will, it's very hard oftentimes for these great track stars to sort of be able to translate their speed and their skill on the football field. And Keegan Jones has now made a living this season on tremendous one cut and go type of runs, but also these incredible wheel routes out of the backfield. We saw it last night again. We've seen it against Utah. We saw it against Oregon. We saw it against Washington. Combination of getting him the ball either through the option or just through a straight throw and sort of that lining up with the linebacker. And Keegan Jones on any linebacker in America, it's ball game. Keegan Jones is going to win that matchup. And so I thought he was absolutely tremendous. And another piece that we're going to need in 2 weeks against SC, and certainly another piece we're going to need next week against Arizona, because I suspect that Chip isn't going to have the usage rate with Charbonnet be off the charts. I think he wants him to be 100% ready for November 19th. So expect a lot more touches from Keegan Jones. And because he's performed so well, that confidence is seamless. You know, we give Chip a lot of credit for interchanging these parts and saying, no Charbonnet, no problem. But there's a second end of that relationship that needs to make that work. And that is players that are talented, players that have skill, and players that are ready and professional when their number is called upon. And Keegan Jones has been that throughout this season. Whether you talk about South Alabama, Alabama State, Oregon, Utah, Washington last night, whenever he's ready, whenever he's needed, he's been ready. And so really deserving of a game ball is Keegan Jones.
And a guy we just didn't think was going to make the impact that we see now with Keegan Jones. He's turned into a legitimate number two running back within the Pac-12. And you can make the argument he's probably top three on that list. You know, if you're going off of just, you know, skill level and talent, Relique Brown across town is a guy to really look at for USC. There's a couple other guys, you know, Utah has some backs in that stable as well. But Keegan Jones, just for where he was last year to where he is now, you can really make a case that he's one of the most improved players on the UCLA roster as he's used. And, you know, he didn't have
that question, right, Will? We asked Chip that question on Pac-12 Media Day. Who did he think was going to be RB2 coming into this season? And there was still a conversation about it, if you recall, at the start of the season. And so for Keegan Jones to make that separation has been really significant. And he's totally outplayed the likes of a Relique Brown at SC. I don't think it's even been close. I think Keegan Jones has been superior and spectacular this year.
Yeah, and you know, it's pointing more to a talent level, like who would you have as your running back number two? But yeah, totally understand. He stepped up last night. It wasn't like he had the home run that Kaz Allen had with the 75-yarders. 12 carries, 98 yards. The longest run in there was 22 of them. So he was just churning out solid gains every time he was touching the ball. Loved what we saw from our guy, Keegan Jones. Final game ball. Variety of different ways we can go. I like giving, you know, some honorable mentions before we get to the final game ball. Grayson Murphy, I thought was fantastic. Half of the Murphy twins. You can honestly give a game ball to both of them. They were fantastic. They combined, you know, for three tackles for a loss, a sack and a half between them. They are everything as advertised. We thought we were going to get an elite pass rushing duo. They have been everything that we've thought them to be. So Murphy twins don't quite get the final game ball, but are in the running for it. You know, different guys. Jake Bobo wasn't targeted as much. Three catches, 64 yards. Did make the most of those targets. So I do want to give a shout out to our guy Bobo. I think Chip's saving him for USC, man. I think he has carved out his level of what he's going to do, similar to what he did to Dulcich 2 years ago in that game where Dulcich kind of exploded onto the scene in a national way. But the guy that I'm going with, Colson Yankoff, man, last drive of the game, you know, he's the Eminem Lose Yourself song playing in the stadium. Colson Yankoff, this is the man we needed. And he just had a hell of a drive, man. You know, the 23-yard gain to get us to the end zone, and then he punches it in from 1 yard. He finished with 8 carries for 48 yards, 6 yards a carry on the ground. You know, extended some of these drives on first downs, making big runs. Colson Yankoff deserves this, man, and it's a really fun story. A guy that was a quarterback, you know, four-star quarterback recruit at Washington, transfers to UCLA, was a wide receiver, was a tight end. They finally put him at running back. People are confused as to why. People are in the press box when Yankoff got his first touchdown going, we didn't even know this guy existed. It's fun to see him in the game. And then he actually is the guy that seals the win for UCLA you know, this year as a guy that's been in the program for 3 or 4 years now. So Colson Yankoff gets my final game ball, Madman. What do you think about that?
Oh, I love it. Can't get enough of it, Thriller. I mean, again, spot on with the assessment there with the Yankoff. And I want to just back up on one thing, Will, for 10 seconds and before talking about Yankoff. You know, when you're talking about Keegan Jones and you said, you know, 12 carries, 98 yards, whole hum. Like, it's not like he did anything great. His longest run was 22 yards. Like, this is the state of the UCLA offense where, you know, pish posh, 22 yards is, you know, a yawner. That's kind of the state of the UCLA offense right now in terms of the type of history that they're trying to make. So Yankoff was terrific. And again, uniquely situated for that scenario, Will. We needed a bell cow. We needed tougher yards. You could tell Kaz Allen was wearing down a little bit. You could tell Keegan Jones not used to getting 20 carries. And that was a very dangerous time in the game, Will. We were only up 6. And so, you know, something goes wrong. If there's another mistake at the mesh point, if there's, you know, a random hit that you don't see, if there's a misread there, Arizona State has the ball only down 6 with an opportunity to steal the game at the end, a game that UCLA has dominated. So for Yankoff to not only just dust himself off from the sideline, and really Yankoff hasn't played very much since that Colorado game. He got great run against South Alabama, Alabama State, that he came in, caught those 2 touchdowns against Colorado. We haven't seen much of him on the field since then. To be able to dust himself off after about 6 weeks and come in to a critical period of the game where you're trying to salt the game away, get that 23-yarder, get that tough yard at the end, absolutely phenomenal. And a career high for Yankoff, 48 yards on 8 carries. 4 guys, Will, had career highs on the ground here. So it's fitting that we're really emphasizing the ground game here. And Yankoff, what a tremendous season that he's had. I mentioned this several weeks ago, Will, when you and I were talking. He reminds me a little bit of Toby Gerhardt. You know, that big number 7, always seems to fall forward, always ready to take on contact. I think he's going to be a huge piece, not just the rest of this year, but moving forward, especially as we try and think about how to replace Charbonnet and need a village to do it. Yankoff might be leading that village next year and going to be a big piece moving forward.
Man, we are hoping Yankoff for Heisman next year. Let's will it to happen. We've manifested some great things with UCLA football. Why stop now? Madman, such a fun one. Big game coming up this week. We're going to have a preview with U of A. Might likely reaching out to the 24/7 guys again. They've been so gracious in coming on. I love what they do there. So likely a U of A 24/7 guys. So stick forward to that. Madman, any last parting thoughts for UCLA as we enter the top 10? And go into the final game before the eventual clash with our crosstown rival USC.
Will, it's just this week is all about avoiding the trap. And we talked about Arizona State being a possible trap game. These are 18 to 22-year-old kids at the end of the day. It can't help but start thinking about SC. And SC starting to think about UCLA. SC has the benefit of playing a team like Colorado that really doesn't pose any sort of a threat, even a B-minus, C-plus game out of SC is probably going to be good enough to win that game. UCLA doesn't have that luxury. Even though Arizona is coming off 4 straight losses, they have 3 of the best receivers in the Pac-12. And now with the injuries to USC at the wide receiver position, you could make the argument that Arizona-Washington are sort of head-to-head in terms of who's got the best receiving room in the conference right now. So UCLA has to be ready. They have to be focused to get through this game, get to 9-1, and then the party can really begin in terms of breaking down the victory bell. So I know Chip is going to be really focused, and I think it's going to be a really interesting week of preparation because you want to be focused, you want to be locked in, but you also don't want to show too much for that week after. So this is where Chip's brilliance really comes into play, and really excited to see what McGovern dials up in terms of defensive discipline in those 3 key areas. So much to be excited about, and here we are. This team is different, that there is no losing streak. There is no stubbing their toe against a lesser opponent. They lost to Oregon. They put together 2 great performances. I expect a great 3rd performance, and let's get the victory bell party started.
Let's get the victory bell party started. 2 weeks away, guys. Stick with us. We got you prepared. Tune into the Victory Bell podcast that we're going to have weekly. Subscribe to the UCLA YouTube channel. But Bruin Bible, we are done here. We are official.